Welcome to the pod, everyone. A shout out to SGS.
Hey, Rusty, why are we partnering with SGS?
Some good people there. Pretty excited about their sports coaching courses and sports courses. Keen to make them industry ready, so when people leave, they're able to go and transfer it to any kind of industries, coaching, teaching, being an analyst, business, whatever it might be. So I think, I think it's pretty exciting times, really.
So what's so special about their degree courses that others won't be doing?
I think it'll be lots of real good partnerships, opportunities for people to get into different contexts and learn and practice. It'll be feel very applied. People will be stretched and supported and will leave ready to just go and thrive in the big old world out there.
SGS College is the home of Bristol's higher education sports programmes. The programmes are designed to develop unique, innovative and creative sports practitioners ready for industry. Do you want to be a coach or teacher of the future? Start your journey here at SGS College and become more than just a graduate. Visit sgscol.ac.uk to apply now.
Richie G, live from Leon. How the devil are you?
Good, Rusty. All good. Just finished off a good week. So we play Racing tomorrow. We travel up tomorrow morning, up to Paris, 5 o'clock kickoff. So no easy games in this league, as you know. So, you know, this will be an interesting one for us. So we had a good start against Clermont and then really bad defeat against Pau, and then came back and beat Perpignan last weekend. So This will be a different challenge again tomorrow evening in the defence arena. So looking forward to that.
Yeah, look, I mean the arena will be class, and I'm enjoying the stash. And I'm assuming you are loving living in a hotel room for weeks at a time.
You know what? It's at the end of the day, I've got a lot of friends that say to me, "You know, how can you do it?" And at the end of it, it's my choice, you know, and I've got a possibly the most understanding wife on the planet, as most rugby coaches do have. And I've got a couple of, you know, great children, daughter and son. So I'm usually away about 10 days a month, either in France coaching, obviously I'm with Fiji as well, so I'll be involved with them in November. And I've been unable to travel to the US with my whole sort of NFL American football commitments, but that will start again in January. So I try my best. 10 days a month is the maximum for me. And then I'm back on GSI business when I'm back home in good old Gala.
Nice. If you ever need a bag, man, just give me a shout.
Because
the hotel room looks nice. Mate, I genuinely like message you. So thanks for being on. Like maybe yesterday or the day before. Everyone's asking me about contact. I know you've done the IRB stuff. People going, how do we get back to it? Like, and I just want to have a discussion. Like, we've come out of COVID. People are pretty deconditioned. Some people have grown. Some people have shrunk. Some, like, people haven't done anything. Some other people have, like, put a gym in their garage and really got into it.
Yeah.
Like, the ground's still hard. There's some stuff coming out about 15 minutes of contact. You put out an IRB course. Like, there's this kind of, not mess, but I just thought it might be helpful to maybe try and decode some stuff. So should we start now?
Yeah, go for it. Ask away. I'll try my best to answer it. If I can't, I'll get somebody else to phone you.
Well, go on. Let's start with the IRB stuff. So tell me what you've done and why.
Yeah, okay. So I've obviously, when COVID kicked in, there was a huge amount of coaches, and obviously you were one of them as well, that it's kind of sort of grown arms and legs a little bit. It started in Paris about a year and a half ago. I can't even remember. It's that long ago, where we were all in the World Rugby Breakdown Group, which was brilliant. Coaches, players, referees, administrators all sitting around one table. I think it was really the first time it had been done, because we pretty much had so much time. And you know what it's like? The minute pro coaching starts again, you're just not going to get a hold of anybody. So, you know, we had a really good group there, obviously led by Joe Schmidt, Mark Harrington, coaches, players, administrators, and we spent a lot of time looking at the whole breakdown area and just sort of cleaning it up more than anything. And on the whole, those sort of variations, and they weren't new laws. It was funny when it came out as everything, there's new laws. It wasn't new laws. It was just variations on how it was going to be refereed, a lot of it being back to refereed properly, because it had got a little bit loose in some areas. So I think on the whole, that's been pretty well received. I think it's made a big difference. When you look at some of the rugby last year, you know, and I'm not saying every game, because, you know, every single game is its own 80 minutes and you've got to take it for that. But on the whole, I saw some really good changes. I saw players getting more accurate, referees having maybe just a slightly easier way of going about refereeing a very, very difficult area. So that was the breakdown, and that's been out for a while. And then I was asked to sit on a group just to look at coming back to playing rugby, because most of us, you know, if you were looking at players at whatever age you were, hadn't really done anything contact collision-wise for months, as you said at the top of the programme here. So it was a real concern, I think, to everybody. And when you haven't done any contact collision type work for a number of weeks and months, you're not ready for it. You know, I always call it, we should always be battle ready and kind of battle hardened. And there's a number of ways you can go about doing that. So there was a really kind of simple sort of handout put together that had a couple of scientists involved in it. Again, referees, coaches, some players, just looking at what you should be doing at different age levels. It was more for the community in the younger game. And that's just been a kind of rough guideline to kind of help coaches, wherever you are in the world, saying, right, before we go back to live play here, I think this is the amount of time we should spend per session, per week, per month, in a build-up to coming back to playing again. So involved in that. And then obviously the one that you've just touched on, and I'm sure it's one that you've been asked a lot about over the last couple of days, and I've had the same, and I wasn't on this group, but I knew it was definitely going on, was obviously the whole time limit on contact, which has really generated some interesting discussions. And obviously, I think being involved in American sport for a number of years, Rusty, I always knew that this was going to come about at some time. You know, when you look back at what the US are doing, and again, I don't talk about rugby or American football, let's just talk about contact and collision sport, which we are part of. They've had contact limits in their sport for a number of years now, you know, especially at the NFL level. The CBA govern that incredibly strictly. So you're even talking about each franchise putting in video every day. It's monitored to the minute on what players are doing. Players also, because they're attached to big unions, know their rights, how long they should be on the field for, how long they should be in the classroom for. So, you know, that's taken it to a completely different level. And then the college system in the US as well have now cut down on contact and practices. So that's been a thing that's been ongoing for a while in the US and in the football. So it wasn't really a shock to me at all when World Rugby came out with some sort of, you know, stipulations. And remember, it's guidelines. I think even stipulations, the wrong word to use. It's guidelines at the moment. And I think if you're involved at different areas of the game, and obviously I'm very lucky that you're involved at the highest level, when the 15-minute sort of figure came out, I would think there'd be a lot of people would go, gee, how can you manage to do that in 15 minutes? But actually, in our world, 15 minutes of full-on contact, we're talking bone-on-bone here, full-on contact, is actually an incredibly long time. And then on the back of that, there's 40 minutes of controlled contact, which we class as sort of shoulders on, grapple and hold. So by the time you put that 40 together with your 15, and remember that doesn't include scrummaging, line out, maul practice, then you've pretty much, I'm quite happy with it. As a coach, I can cope with that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how often Leon trained, but there'll be teams in the Prem that train twice a week. And that's probably like a third to a half of their training. And the stuff I kind of wrote down as you were speaking there, like, I think it's, well, look, I think it's a blunt instrument if you consider it literally. Like, I think you're, you know, of course, like sometimes you don't need to do contact. Or if you've got a player that's like new to contact and you want to upskill them, then you might be doing more of the grapply stuff to support them. But I think it's brought in, and obviously like, I do know the RPA have been involved to like prevent some coaches that were getting a little bit excessive with contact. And I've heard of players walking off the pitch, and because it's actually like it has got ridiculous in some places.
Yeah, I think Rusty, you know, a sort of typical professional week. If we play on Saturday, Sunday off, although a number of players will be in, physio will be open from, you know, 8 in the morning till 1 or 2 in the afternoon, just in case anybody needs to be checked up. Monday's a big organisation day, number of meetings, review, preview, pretty much walking through an install of what we're going to put in for the following week's training. Tuesday, we're then into, you know, full session. There will be contact within that. Wednesday is an off day. Thursday is another session, speed session. It's more a quicker, faster session. But again, everybody's different. Then Friday, team run. And then Sunday, we play. So it's actually quite easy. But then at the end of the day, it's a professional job. And we've got sports scientists with us and, you know, you name it, a whole ream of people. So if your week's organised properly, then it shouldn't really be too much of a problem, you know. And I think it might even go further. And, you know, you're always looking at, okay, this has been brought in the last few days and it's going to be a guideline. Where's it going to go next? It could well go to, and most of our players already are on GPS and they're monitored. It could well be going to somebody sitting by the side of the field, as we have at the moment, on meterage and training zones that these players are in, that if a player takes more than X amount of contacts over a certain limit, that they're just taken off the field. That might happen, you know? So I think if it's organised properly in the professional game, I think it'll be quite easy to install and put together. You hit a good point. Sometimes players need extra. And that, if it's done in a sensible way, is fine. And also, pre-season, there's usually a little bit more contact because we've just talked about trying to get players back into being battle ready again. So there may well be more in that pre-season time. But, Rusty, players now are not stupid, right? They've got, especially at the pro level, they've got 10 years to make as much as they can financially, make themselves secure, and as coaches, you want to make sure that your players, and I've said this before on podcasts with yourself, I judge myself as a coach that in 25, 30 years' time, I'm going to see players that I've coached kicking a ball about with their son or daughter, not hobbling about with crutches or sitting in a wheelchair. So I think a lot of common sense comes into this now, and more just your sort of coaching integrity. And, you know, players speak. If all of a sudden a club is known as a place that absolutely flogs its players to bits, I'm telling you now, you'll not have many players there. You know, yeah. They'll keep away from it. So I think it's a common sense thing more than anything else. And listen, you know, I'm 51 years old, right? Some days I feel like 70, depending on how long I've been holding the shield for. But, you know, I coached and came through an era where it was full-on brutality for 45 minutes to an hour. That was what we did.
Right? Yeah, at least.
Yeah, at least, right, at least. And that was 2 to 3 times a week, full-on. There was guys getting split, ligaments, broken bones. And it was just part of the deal because that was what it was all about. And, you know, we were all, you know, battle-hardened and, you know, that was what life was about. And then it dawned on me that the way you win games is to keep your players as fit and healthy as possible. And that's where I started to think, and I had a major rethink round about 2010-11. I started thinking, hang on a minute here, you know, I'm going to have to get this sorted out. And, you know, we've had huge discussions. I went heavily into training aids and using them properly and creating training aids that are going to be a benefit and not just a gimmick. So training aids became a huge part of the game. Conditioning and working with the rest of the coaches in the building, linking with the medics, linking with the conditioners, to get our players being able to cope with what I was wanting to try and ask them to do, you know. And then after that, instead of going 25 minutes live for a block, we would work towards full contact over the 25 minutes, for example. So, you know, in just a very sort of rudimentary way of looking at it, could have been 7 or 8 minutes conditioning type work, movement principles into wrestling, one-on-one, you know, being able to work your way around a body, then into training aids for maybe 10, 11, 12 minutes, then into live for 6 or 7 minutes. So all of a sudden, instead of having 25 minutes full on, bone on bone, we were finding better ways of getting to the end. And then at the end of the season, your medics are sitting around saying, listen, we've had less injuries now than we've ever had, so you knew you were on the right path. But, you know, we've come through the era of really learning and having to really change what we've done. And folks say old school. I hate hearing that because it wasn't old school. It was the way it was done, you know. And I think of the way I was coached and the way you were coached, Rusty, it was live from the whistle until you finished and crawled into a shower, you know. So we're far, far more down the line now. Science is playing a huge part in it. And, you know, you just got to be sensible. We're also dealing with different shapes of bodies now too. You know, we've got human beings that are 18, 20, 23, 24 stone human beings that can move, that are powerful, that are flexible. And we don't want them colliding with each other for an hour at our training sessions, or we're not going to have a team left, you know?
Yeah, mate, look, and like a couple of things I wrote down. Amazing that you're still holding the shield. Well done at 51.
I can't help myself.
I can't hold a shield for my 16-year-old son. Thursday nights at Bath were often harder than Saturday, which was ridiculous.
Yeah.
We all knew it was ridiculous. I love coaching integrity. Again, like, there's been some stuff, like, even when we've known about concussion, that's been unacceptable, in my opinion, and I think clearly the players holding coaches to account is critical. And then I just love the, you know, like 15 minutes is cool, isn't it? Because you've exaggerated the problem. Like, so you've only got 15 minutes. What are you going to do? Like, you need to really think about it. If I gave you 5, you'd think about it even more. If I gave you 5 hours, you could be a bit more kind of, you'd get some more stuff wrong. And so I just wrote down some topics for us to explore. So first one I thought about, so you said movement, like, where does movement fit into your contact training? Because, again, I think about use of training aids or, you know, some of the defensive stuff I see, and it's actually quite linear reality of the game. It's not like straight lines. It's dictating, it's reacting. Actually, people can move laterally, probably less likely to get their head in a poor position.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you'll never beat live practice. Okay. It doesn't matter what you say. You'll never, ever beat live practice, right? But there's a number of ways of getting your players ready and conditioned for contact and collision. And that's where you've got to be innovative and you've got to think outside the box. So I spoke to my players this morning. We had a team run this morning. And
in French? En français?
Yeah, well, actually one New Zealander and 2 Frenchmen. And, and literally the guys follow rugby. So that, you know, social media, they know what's going on. And they said to me right away, because obviously you're the contact collision skills coach at the club, they said, you know, what do you think? And I said, right, okay, we did an 8-minute defensive drill on Tuesday. And 8 minutes is a long time, right? We did an 8-minute defensive drill and we did it with approximately 14 players. Now, if I was actually putting a stopwatch on each individual player and when they initiated the collision and when they finished with it, I would possibly be looking at, if you're lucky, out of that time zone,
20 seconds.
45 seconds to a minute each, because they're not always involved in the collision. So when you look at it that way, you've got to build up your practices and you've got to also say, you know, this is a real bugbear of mine. Don't do a practice just for the sake of it, because everything must relate to what we're doing, who we're playing against, and the plan. And I've been, you know, I was in coach education for many years when I was involved in development, and used to go to practices, and they were literally drill to drill to drill to drill, and then finished with some sort of game at the end. And you used to think, really, does that drill there, does it really relate to what you're going to do this weekend? And the answer on the whole was no. So no. I think you're right, Rusty. It puts coaches, I'm not going to say pressure, because it's our job. We've got to get it right. And we've got to make sure that what we're doing is meaningful, and there's a why behind it. And I know there's all this great, you know, chat about why, and there must be a why behind it. But I always remember, Heineke Meyer always told me a great quote. He said, the coach that knows why will always be ahead of the coach that knows how. And you could use that in so many different things. You know, the company that knows why will always be ahead of the company that knows how. We all know how to do it, but why are we doing it? And that's the key. And I'll tell you what you've got now at the level we're at, is you've got players that will question, why are we doing this today? Okay. So they have to understand that, guys, we're going to spend the next 4.5 minutes on this, because when we did the install on Monday, Team X are going to play this certain way. That's why we're doing it. Not all players will ask, but some do. And it's great when they do, because it means that they're thinking about the game. So there's that. The whole movement thing for me, and it differs at every level, but you want good movers. And I always say, when I coach young players at 18, 19, 20, and, you know, they've not had any injuries, because remember, at pro level, there's a pretty good chance you're going to have had an ankle problem or a knee problem or a shoulder, because it's just, we're in a contact collision sport. And, you know, these things are going to happen, and we must understand that. But when you work with young players, there's a sort of bounce about them. There's speed and movement and flexibility, and, you know, they can move well. And sometimes a lot of injury, in my opinion, comes from players that just don't move well. They get themselves in the wrong positions. They're not in control of their body. And that's a whole different podcast, Rusty, because now, because of the high tackle framework, it's so important that you're in charge of your body, because a ball carrier's level change can change in a second. And if you can't duck and dive and bob and weave and keep your eye on the target, then you're going to have trouble, you know? So I think our coaching and the way we go about coaching our players for this new evolving game, well, it's real. I think it's great, you know, because we want to make the game fast, dynamic, movement. But to do that, you've got to have players that can do that. And that's where I think we've got a lot of work to do. We all went strength conditioning mad and these massive lifts, and a lot of our players just got more and more and more and more tight, you know. So there's a lot of good work being done now around all the pro environments, where we're trying to create multi-purpose players technically, and we're trying to create players that can cope with the demands of an incredible, incredible game. You know, it's like no other. And, you know, I'm lucky that I'm involved in a number of different aspects of contact and collision sports. And, you know, I look at the NFL, where it's 5 seconds of explosive mayhem, into rugby union, which could be 45 seconds to a minute 15 of, you know, constant movement and regrouping and shaping and reshaping within contact and back into position. You know, phenomenal sport to be involved in.
You've triggered me again, like Japan, Jonesy, wanted to be the best movers at the World Cup. Be interesting to see what their injury rate was like, but really effective tacklers. Again, like, isn't it like, that the ability to dip late, like, is like really important now, isn't it?
Well, stay as big as long as you can. It's still there, and all the things we were coached. You know, people always think there's all these huge new things coming out in rugby. And my father coached for years. You know, he coached the South of Scotland provincial team. You know, he was 80 on Wednesday. Still going strong, still watching rugby, still got a sharp mind when it comes to why are you doing that? why is that French team you've got? Why are you not doing this? And, you know, really inquisitive about the game. And the amount of times I've said, you know, someone, we're working on this, you know, for example, we could be looking at scanning, you know, we could be looking at, you know, we were doing that years ago, you know. And yeah. We all think we're inventing something new. The game's a wheel, you know. So it's just really interesting for me, Rusty, on where it's all going. And it's funny when you talk about Japan. I had a great chat with two Japanese club coaches this week, Dave Dillon and the guys. And they were saying that the Japanese youngsters move well because it's within their physical education curriculum. Yeah. There's a huge gymnastic, martial arts. So you talk about multi-sport athletes that come into rugby. There's a difference in them, you know? And I was always told, if you ever want to create a good games player, make sure within their young years they do gymnastics, they do judo, you know, and they play a team sport. Make sure it's basketball, volleyball, netball, rugby, rugby union, rugby league. Give them a real sort of education in movement. Because if you've never done that, your body won't be conditioned to it. And I think now, the game of rugby union, that's what we're talking about, our players have to be far better at reshaping and movement. And, you know, you talked about dipping late, dropping from hips and being able to get into positions and out of positions quickly and into positions quickly. And it's, I think there's a whole new world to look at there.
Yeah, again, like often on a, and I'm trying to relate this to like Sunday morning, like we should be playing Ninja Warrior type stuff. We should be playing tag. We should be like doing the Boing games where we're bouncing them around the hip and get below stuff and yep. over stuff and like just, you know, better movement solutions. Because the reality is we don't have that stuff on our curriculum. Second area I wanted to explore was like positional. So when you yep. spoke about that 8-minute game, actually, the fullback probably only had like 5 minutes of conduct or 5 seconds of conduct.
Like, yeah, sorry. That,
again,
yeah,
there's some that, there's some yeah. different stuff going on. Again, like how mindful are you of the – clearly there's some general stuff, but also how mindful are you of the, some specific stuff? Like, for example, you know, a winger might be actually having a collision that's in the air as opposed to on the yeah. ground.
Yeah,
definitely. A fullback might be making a tackle from someone with a bit more speed and perhaps a prop who's like defending next to a ruck and their star points. And would that be reflected yeah. In your training? I mean, I guess, look, yes. of course, we could play the game and we get that stuff. But if we want to have 15 minutes, you know, built around that, it would, in my mind, there would be some kind of stations, let's call them stations,
yeah.
where people would do some stuff that's likely to happen in the game.
Hey, Will, yeah. you tell yeah. everyone what you're up to at Core 37.
Hi, Fletch. We're a teamwear brand based in the Northeast and we're the sister company of Oddballs. We've got the largest sports sublimation factory in the UK and we've produced for the biggest brands in Europe over the past 7 years. But with Core 37, our in-house brand, you can now access those prices direct to the customer.
Why would people use Core 37?
If I was to pick three, Fletch, it would be our lead time of 3 to 4 weeks, our price, which is lower than anybody else in the industry, and the fact that we're made here in the UK.
What's the stuff you're most proud of at Core 37?
Oh, there's loads of stuff, but the key one for me would be working for a company that genuinely believes in its own mission statement, which is to produce performance sportswear at an affordable price. And then underpinning that is the people. Everybody who works here is involved in grassroots sport in some way. And so we genuinely care about what we're doing here. Fletch, why do you want to partner with Core 37?
Apart from the fact you're a Geordie, great people, lots of people involved in sport, really affordable and top quality. Thanks for joining us, Wilkie. Anyone who wants to find out more can go and have a play on their website at core-37.com or they can reach out directly to tom@core-37.com.
It's happening in the game.
Yeah. No, definitely, Rusty. I think, and that's where all of a sudden the coaching group, including the conditioners and everybody else that's involved, if you're going to do it properly, you've got to take real time on planning down to the minute. And I could tell you some great stories about down to the minute, you know. So in American football, there'll be stand-up arguments across the boardroom with the coaches of a guy wanting 30 more seconds, you know, and, you know, folk wouldn't understand it in the normal world that we used to come from. about arguing for an extra minute and a half on your defensive drill, and the head coach says, no, you're only getting 3 minutes. I need that extra half minute. So, you know, you become very, very good. And don't get me wrong, we still get it wrong, but you become very good at prioritising what has to be within the session. And then it comes down to the individual. And I remember, and I've already used the term, Richie Dixon, who was director of rugby in Scotland and coached Scotland for years, and was a great thinker of the game, actually did great work in Georgia. Always used to talk about developing the multi-purpose player. And this was 15 years ago he was talking about this. And when you look now, the multi-purpose player must be able to tackle at three different levels. You know, I always talk about level one, two, and three, different positions on the body. Must be confident in tackling steel, tackling counter ruck, taking a ball at different... We must create a more multi-purpose player, because the game's going that way, and it has been for a number of years. It's not a new thing. So, yeah. You know, the good old days of the backs doing certain things and the forwards doing, it's now become far, far more similar skills for all positions. But the beauty of our sport is we still have positional, you know, that need the intricacies and the detail of their position. But there's now a foundation of building blocks that every player must have.
Yeah.
And if they don't have them, Rusty, they're going to be found out at our level, because the analysts are onto you. So if they know that Russell Earnshaw can't step off his left and, you know, always holds the ball in his chest when he goes to ground, you're going to be a target. So I'm always saying to my players, don't be on the film of the opposition analysis guys. Yeah, make sure you keep off the film. So there's a whole world to explore there as well. But we're wanting to create multi-purpose players, you know?
Yeah, and look, again, I'm going to give a shout-out to our app, but our app does all of that. Like, how do you dictate as defenders? Keep a record, interesting, some stuff Tom Dunn did around his throwing in, where kept a record of it all. Again, as young players, keep a record of your tackles. Yeah. Which ones are you effective at? Which ones do you want to get better at? Like, become a bit of a student around... Can you rip the ball? Can you hold people up? Can you tackle, get bounced up? Can you actually make really good decisions to leave the ball alone and go and have another fight? Second topic, confidence.
Yeah.
Talk to me. Well, what's going on in your head?
In my head or the players?
Both. Your head about the players' head.
You know, I'm going to come back to that one. It's funny, Rusty, you mentioned the app, and I was lucky. I've been involved with World Rugby now for about the last year and a half, creating the whole Tackle Ready program. And there's 100 things you could put in there drills-wise, but I just tried to mix them up a little bit and make them a little bit different. So you were talking about youngsters coming under and over a bag, then make the tackle. You know, you don't always get a straight line in, you know, it's the line of least resistance. You know, when you talk about to world championship canoeists, they talk about hitting the line of least resistance, and that's what you're trying to get in rugby union, to get to the point. But there's bodies, you know, there's players rolling out left and right now, hopefully from tackles, and
no one's rolling south, mate. No one's rolling south now,
you know. So you've got to be ready, and you've got defensive lines trying to take out support players with a legion of block, and so you've got to be far, far sharper now. So that's one thing, digressing. Confidence, you know, confident players for me are less prone to injury, okay? Because they understand and they know. So let's take tackling, right? Confident tacklers are good tacklers, and they've been well coached, and, you know, they know where to put their head, and they know how to clamp and wrap and grip and tighten against the body. Just a little, they've got a diet of things that they know, this is what I need to do to be a good tackler. Now, if you asked any 16-year-old in the UK, write down 6 or 7 points about a good tackle. I don't know if they'd be able to do it at the moment. And, you know, I've had this discussion with you that we've got a collision contact sport, and I don't particularly think we've got a tackle culture in it. And it's the biggest challenge of our sport is getting that bit right. But just posters on, here's the, you know, ABC of tackling. This is why we're in the gym. We're in the gym because it's going to make you stronger at this part of the game. It's going to make you a better tackler. It's going to make you a safer tackler. We've got to create a whole new culture of, if you come into rugby union, and I'm talking rugby union here, if you come into the game of rugby, these are the things that you've got to have in your armoury before you step on the field. Tackle, contact skills, you know, movement, you know, pass, catch, kick, we could go through the whole thing, but when it comes to the challenge of contact, there's key things that you got to be good at. You got to be confident that you can do them well, you know? And I still think we're a long way away from that.
Yeah, look, and just to kind of maybe build on some of that stuff, James Bell spoke to me about confidence being like a certain percentage positive mastery experiences and then some peer-to-peer stuff and those options, almost like badges around different aspects of tackling and the stuff you spoke about, like head in a safe place, critical, yep. Like the most important thing, but also like where you put your feet so that you can manipulate an attacker, like yep. Where you start so that you put an attacker where you want to put them so you can then manipulate them, like
yep.
That type of stuff is like, and again, thinking about pitch depth, so if I'm learning, I'm like a level one, level two then, I don't want Richie Gray running at me at full pelt. I want yep. like a 2 meter run up and I might want 2 meters of width and we can then start the thing and you know, seeing it in your stuff again, like just the levels, just understanding and also that progress of the kids. I've moved from level two to level three. I just got my bronze tackle badge.
Yeah.
The last thing with this is like, And just to shout out to the coaches, really, is like, I think collaboration around defence is critical. So if you've got the yep, big yep. kid that's running over the little kids, actually getting that kid to support the kids, or we're actually rewarding two-man hold-up tackles as opposed to one-man ones, or we're collaborating as a group to see how many effective tackles in a row we can get, like
yep.
where we're then supporting and coaching each other as opposed to like Richie Gray runs over Rusty, just breaks me. Again,
yeah.
again, and again. I have this vivid memory of training with England sevens. I think we were in Malaysia, and I had to defend one on one against all the backs in a 15-meter like wide area, and I quite frankly didn't touch anyone. But I actually didn't know what to do, so I wasn't dictating. I was sat on my feet. I was square on. I was like getting it all wrong. It was like I don't have a great memory, but I remember thinking, "This is not helping me."
No. No, and it's funny, Rusty, you know, I always try and simplify things and I can be a bit of a nightmare for like ultra detail and sometimes I have to just say, right, hang on a minute here and bring myself back to my anchors. But over the last, you know, 15, 20 years of coaching, I decided about 2010 that I just had to, you can go off on tangents a lot as a coach. So you have to have anchors that you come back to. And I spoke to quite a few business guys and people in different walks of life talking about, you know, how do you break down a list of 23 things to, is it two or is it three things? And I always like five because I think five makes it forensic detail, you know? So everything I do, pretty much, if I look at the tackle, I've broken it down into five key aspects, which
come
is
on,
tracking.
Tell me, tracking.
Yeah, tracking, preparation, connection, acceleration, and finish. Now, if you don't get the tracking part right, then your preparation is going to be a problem and you're not going to connect properly, you know? So folks say to me, well, what's the most important one? Well, they're all equally important, but you've got to get to the point first. So tracking, preparation are vital. Connection, yes, you want to make a good connection. You won't always accelerate. When I talk about accelerate, I'm looking at using my feet in the ground and accelerating through. Sometimes there'll be a tackle goes over your shoulder. You won't always get the perfect square hit. It just doesn't happen. But why I put it into five was I've got a son who's 11 years old and he was learning mini rugby a number of years ago and I spoke to a parent on the sideline at my local club down at Galen. And the parent wasn't a rugby person at all, hadn't come through rugby, And I said, you know, come and help out and that kind of thing. And so he said, oh, he said, I wouldn't know where to start. He said, it's such a difficult sport. And geez, I've been reading all about this tackling. I don't want anything to do with that. So I thought to myself, even if that coach, who's never played before, understood over a period of 6 or 8 weeks what track, prepare, connect, accelerate and finish was, boy, it'd be so far down the line than what he might have known before, you know. And I've done the same with breakdown as well. Ball carrier, 5 key principles. First support player, 5 key principles. Second support player, I've done it in attack, defence. And I just always go back to it sometimes, because you can sometimes head off down the wrong avenue and you think, hang on a minute, let's bring it back here. And it doesn't matter what level you're at, Rusty, simplicity is key. If you can do simple things well over and over and over again, especially when fatigued, then, you know, it's the way to go. It really is. And overcomplicating things is exactly that, you know. And that's sometimes when injury comes about as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, people use detail, like, as I think, to overcomplicate stuff. I've gone for 4. I've gone for scan.
Yep.
Connect.
Yep.
Trap. I was going to put tape, but I'm going trap because I want to put them where I want to put them. And then FIFA. And FIFA to me is feet in the FIFA circle, head in the safe place.
Yeah, so, in the circle.
Especially with the younger ones. Let's go on to, so of course, like the stuff we're talking about, like, one of the challenges is we do a lot of touch rugby where actually, you know, I've been in prem clubs where people have like touched on one with a fingertip and gone, hands on heads, which is of course like really poor preparation for actually the game we're going to play. Because often you don't get in front of people. Often you're not close. Often you're not considering your head because it's not relevant. So I guess what's your view around touch stuff? Would you be like a John Fletcher and say that actually touch is generally shoulders? And you might have some stuff, for example, where one-handed touch, two-handed touch, they can offload. Actually, if people get close, then you can't offload. Yeah. Would you play around with that stuff?
Yeah, I do, and I have done. So I despair sometimes when I see a youngster lunge and just, I'll say, okay, the touch has got to be on the hip, for example, because where the core goes, the body goes. So let's look at the hips. It's a really key place to look at. And they'll just touch the hip with a finger, and it's a touch. Well, it's not good enough. So what I sometimes do is say, right, the touch has got to be 2 hands, but it's got to be on the faraway hip. So if you're not getting square, it then means that they've got to at least wrap, touch, and get out of there. There's still not a massive amount of contact, but it's just changing the different targets on the body. Shoulder on, definitely, as well, and how to do it, but it's always shoulder and squeeze. Because I've seen shoulder on done before, and it's exactly what you get. You get a shoulder on with no clamp or grip. So other times I might say, right, shoulder on, clamp, grip, arrowhead. So I'm going to judge you on 4 things. So the shoulder's in, it's a clamp, grip, and I see the head, you get the tackle. If I don't see the 4 things, you don't get them. But
can I just before you go further, so how, like, intentionally you with your coaching group, because you're going to coach with Kenny and some of the coaches, that actually we have some language that we generally all use? Because again, I was somewhere the other week and I just wrote a list of the language that was used and actually heard 20 different phrases. Like, again, is that confusing? You know, what's your experience? Is that confusing to players? Is it helpful? Is it like...
No, I think every environment has its own language, you know? And what you find quite tricky sometimes is, and it's I find it quite funny, is, for example, say we're talking about a first support player to the ball carrier, right? So this person gets a number of different names, you know? It could be the clamp, it could be the spear, it could be the bodyguard, it could be... And we all have our own terminology, you know? I think where it's really important, terminology, is, and we've discussed this, is actually within the media. If the media could use track, prepare, connect, accelerate, and finish, it just so quickly becomes, and this is not for top level rugby, this is for everyone, you know, that when we talk about tracking, we all know exactly what it is. If somebody says, oh, the preparation phase of the tackle, everybody understands that, you know. And it's funny, Rusty, you know, you're on social media and I follow it quite a bit as well. This week, there's been a huge amount of tweets and the game's too difficult to understand, you know? And we keep making it difficult. The law book's too big, whatever. Now, many would argue for, many would argue against, and that's a whole different podcast. But just basic language makes it so much easier, you know?
And we spent years trying to get the commentators in a room.
Yeah.
Because again, yeah, like they have five words for a rook.
Yeah, well, there's a rook, it's a breakdown, it's a tackle contest, there's 10 different, you know, you name it. So it's confusing. And I always think of, I was a PE teacher. So I went through PE college and I was in Scotland and there was only one PE college in Scotland. So there was 90 students there, 45 male, 45 female. Out of the 45 male students, there was maybe 15, 20 footballers, right? And I remember the first time we got rugby, obviously easy to the rugby group. The football guys were completely lost with the sport. They couldn't get their head around it. Offside and, you know, just what's going on here? So, you know, should we simplify it? Yes, I think we should. How do we go about doing it? Oh, we need to get in a room and we need to have some really interesting conversations. But I think we could make it simpler. I really do.
I agree. I mean, I know the game well and I had someone mess me today about a rule with the under-14s and I had to look it up myself. Like, I was like, oh, I'll just check on this. Which probably leads me on, like, last thing that I'm, like, interesting. So Richie Gray gets parachuted in, coaching Gala, under-12s or any age group. Like, what's the stuff that you're going, right? And they've said, Richie, like, we're going to play a game in a couple of weeks. And again, we haven't even got on to competition. But, of course, like, there's options around competition. So Clifton College near me the other day, they played a third touch, a third contest, the breakdown, a third contact. That makes sense to me. I've seen some schools going back to full contact. I think it's quite frankly ridiculous. And of course they'll have some injuries, but you get parachuted in and they're saying, look, we want you to work on contact stuff. We got game coming up in a couple of weeks. What's the stuff that you're like thinking, I've got to put this in, and what are you going, this stuff I'm not going to do?
Rusty, at that age, and you know, we're really lucky, you know, because I do still get involved. I'd love to get involved more in my local club, but I'm, you know, all over the world. And
they don't pay as well as the NFL, do they?
No, it doesn't matter about that, you know. So I've got a son that's involved at Gala Rugby Club in the P7 group. So they're 11 years old, and when I can, I get down there. And the key thing for me is just being at that age, being used to getting used to another player's body, working their way around a body, being confident with, they call it fit and feel in America, American football, it's called fit and feel, where the shoulder goes, what does a grapple feel like? And this is where I feel really sorry for youngsters. When I was growing up, and I feel like a right old guy here, I'd be out till 10 o'clock at night wrestling, playing five-a-side football, then we'd play rugby, then we would play baseball, then we would go and bloom and, you know, run around the town, and you'd get back at darkness and you'd repeat right through the summer holidays. You'd be golfing, you'd be playing tennis, you name it. Whatever was on the television, you played. So a lot of these youngsters now, they're not used to, and I've said this to you before, rough and tumble, you know. They're not used to rough and tumble. And, you know, I had two brothers, so you were in it pretty much every day. But we've got to get them used to physical connection and make them confident in that first. Then you can bring in the tackling. Then you can bring in the basic principles of the breakdown, you know, or the tackle contest, or whatever you want to call it. But they've got to be used to going bone on bone in a controlled manner and make them confident in that first. How to fall properly. We hardly ever speak about falling. You know, we always talk about the tackler. How about the child that's carrying the ball? Because they end up in a, what's the best way to fall and roll and present? And we've got to get all of those things into them first. And then you can start polishing up the diamond, you know?
Nice. Yeah, and again, like, playful, like, you don't have to, like, it could be like, yeah, it could be sock wrestling, could be like King of the Ring, could be, yeah. Someone said to me the other day, Chris Golding, hockey coach, shout out to Chris. Why wouldn't enjoyment be your number one thing? Like, give me a good reason. Yeah. Why it wouldn't be?
Yeah. Well, I was a development officer. I started off as a development officer in the good old days with your bag of 10 balls and your stack of cones and off you went. And I was up in the northeast of Scotland. Jim Telfer, thanks Jim, sent me away up to Aberdeen in the northeast. And I went up there and it wasn't a huge rugby area. Every session had to be brilliant. Yeah. You had to sell it, you know, and you were a salesman for rugby, but you had to sell it and your sessions had to be exciting and you had to have youngsters, you know, boy, I love that, you know, because they didn't have a clue. A lot of the schools you went to, it was Highland League, Aberdeen Football Club, you know, it was football area and you had to go in and enthuse them, you know, and the last thing you're going to do is line a group of kids up and say, right, smack them as hard as you can, no technique. You wouldn't have any back the next week, you know. So you got, at that age group I'm talking about, you've got to enjoy it. But hey, you got to enjoy it when you're in our age group as well. And professional rugby, you've got to enjoy what you do. If you don't enjoy it, you're not gonna finish off where you want to be, coaching or playing. You got to enjoy what you do, you know.
Mate, on that, I'm gonna finish it. I hope you enjoyed it, wrestling tomorrow. I'm very jealous. What an arena to go and, like, hang in. Even better if you were playing. Like, second best is coaching.
I said that to a player, Rusty, today, because on the Friday, obviously, the boys aren't playing. We do a session with them as well. So we have the team run, and then we do a session for the guys that aren't playing. And it was a tough one. You know, it was a really tough running fatigue. We actually didn't do a lot of contact in it, but we did a lot on equipment and, you know, they were blowing hard by the end of it. But at the end of it, after 2 or 3 minutes, you recover, life goes on. And would you rather be sitting in an office from 9 to 5 with 15-minute tea break and half an hour for your lunch and then back to that sitting at a screen? Or would you be rather, you know, getting as fit as you can and being ready to play next week?
Well, as someone who just ran 10K and feels terrible, I think I would rather be sat in the office. But, mate, it's been a pleasure. If and when you win tomorrow, definitely give me a call with a glass of red wine again. I would appreciate that. All right.
Good lads. Give me a tough day tomorrow. They're a good side, but as I said to you before we started this, every game in the top 14 is a tough run. So we just got to get ourselves right and get going. So I'm looking forward to it.
Mate, legend, stay safe. I'll share the link, everyone. Over and out.
Cheers, Rusty.